This is Talking Points, Kent's politics podcast.
Hello and welcome to Talking Points, Kent's politics podcast. I'm your host Oliver Kemp and I'm joined as always by our political editor Paul Francis. How are you doing today, Paul?
I'm good. We're in post-budget analysis mode.
We are. This is a little bit of a quick special episode where we will be reacting to the budget which the Chancellor Rishi Sunak has just put forward. So a lot of this is going to fall on you, Paul, because you're the one that's been following it all morning.
You're like pushing me off the top board of the swimming pool, aren't you?
Pretty much, into
the fiscal pool of water.
The fiscal pool. Yeah. It doesn't sound very inviting, to be honest.
No.
So what are the big points that we're coming out of thinking about?
Well, this was a budget that was always going to be dominated by the ongoing corona virus crisis, not yet an epidemic, I've been told by you earlier. So it was no surprise that the Chancellor actually began his speech by tackling that head on. And he announced a series of measures which in total came to around about £30 billion, which was basically a move to try and give businesses some confidence that they could get through the crisis.
Because this is a big concern for businesses, isn't it? It's going to affect, in theory, going to affect a lot of different businesses, but small businesses especially.
Yeah, and there's a lot of small businesses in Kent. In fact, Kent is dominated by small and medium-sized businesses, so they will be very interested in some of this stuff, like business rates being abolished this year for firms with a rate or value below £51,000, a £500 million hardship fund, which will be run by local authorities. So there was plenty of stuff in there that is, you know, directed at ensuring that businesses stay in the game, basically.
This must have been a pretty interesting budget to put forward for a Chancellor who is very new to the job. And the coronavirus crisis has... I don't know if this is just the way I look at it, but it feels like it's sort of come out of nowhere. We came out of the back end of last year talking about the election and talking about Brexit and that being our big talking point. And we're sitting at our news desk upstairs every day now and coronavirus is the main thing we're talking
it's
about.
It's weird. It is kind of strange. And, he was always going to get a good reception from the Tory backbenchers, but I think there was a genuine sense that he put in quite an impressive performance at the dispatch box, given that he's only been Chancellor for a matter of a few weeks. And he was quite deft in terms of handling the issue of the virus, whose name I just forgot.
The virus of corona.
The virus of corona.
It's a new way of saying it.
Because, you know, it could have been kind of all doom and gloom. And he managed, I thought, to present it in a way which actually said, hey, you know, We're on your side. We're going to get through this together. He said a lot about, you know, drawing together the country to, you know, see off the challenge of the virus crisis, and he did it in a way which actually made him sound quite optimistic. You know, which is quite odd, really. He was realistic as well, but there was a sense in which he was, you know, ready for the fight.
Is this also in context of the last few budgets we've had or the last few Tory governments? Because much of the budgets for the last 10 years have been dominated by austerity measures. And then, you know, during Theresa May's reign, there was a few contentious points between Philip Hammond at the time, who was the Chancellor, and Theresa May as Prime Minister. Does this feel like is that why it feels so positive? Because there's a big cash injection?
Yeah, well, possibly, yeah. I mean, someone tweeted quite... and observantly suggested that was a budget that Gordon Brown could have presented, which I think was quite an interesting analysis, because it was pretty much a kind of spend budget in lots of respects. And as ever, the devil will be in the detail. But it was hard actually to keep pace with the various announcements that he kept coming out with, you know. And just as an add to the money that's going towards the NHS for dealing with the virus, which he said there'll be another £5 billion, I think it is.
You said but the NHS would get whatever it needs, yes, whatever it costs.
An emergency reform fund, he's described it as. So there's £5 billion for that. And on top of that, £6 billion additionally for 50,000 more nurses, 50,000 million GP appointments, work on 40 new hospitals, and the hospitals was a big issue in the election campaign.
Will that include Canterbury?
Well, this is the big question. Will it include Canterbury? Possibly, we don't know yet. But I just thought, you know, there is an awful lot of money being spent here. How's he going to balance the books in terms of the kind of revenue that he needs to support that investment?
And one of the other the biggest numbers to come out of today's budget was the $170 billion investment programme.
Yes.
Can we speculate to what that's going to go towards?
Well, I think this is all about investment in bandword infrastructure projects.
Ooh.
And this budget was being billed as the one which would set the tone for the government's approach to levelling up the economy. And I think that sum of money, £170 billion investment, is actually there to drive forward the kind of economic regeneration of the northern towns, which are a preoccupation for the Conservative Party, because that's where they unexpectedly won lots of seats at Labour's expense in the election, and they've got to find ways of hanging on to that support. So I think this is all geared towards that kind of idea that they need to fulfil their promises.
So if we're talking the north, and we're talking infrastructure, and we're talking investment there, we're talking high speed to Northern Powerhouse.
Yeah, exactly.
Which has obviously been it's been in the news a lot over the last 6 months or so. We talked about it as well, and its relation to kind of how long it took for HS1 to get off the ground, and how many businesses and families and homes would be affected by the infrastructure building it, that seems like a pretty straightforward massive injection in those programs, doesn't it?
It is. I think there's a concern here for Kent, which is whether this kind of levelling up comes at a cost to Kent, because I think what councils in Kent and Conservatives in Kent are worried about is that any plans to invest more money in the north might be at the expense of investment in the southeast, and in particular, obviously, Kent. So I think, again, it's one of these announcements where there's creates good headlines, but not much detail attached to it at the moment. And I think there is a sense in which Kent Conservatives are concerned that they might be overlooked in this kind of drive to hang on to these northern seats that they won at the election.
Another one that I thought was fairly interesting is the $650 million of funding to help rough sleepers into permanent accommodation.
Yeah, I mean, that strikes me as a pretty sizable chunk of money. I think everyone, you know, if you walk around many towns, I'm sure you'll notice that there seems to be, well, there's an impression that there's a lot more rough sleepers around than there have been. And I think it's a kind of a bit of a sensitive point for the Conservatives. So this was a plan which will try to kind of put the lid on criticisms of the Conservatives that they don't really care about, you know, those who are living on the streets.
What is interesting about the whole issue into rough sleeping and homelessness is that the last figures that were released, which was only a couple of weeks ago, the numbers are down, especially in Kent. But I've speaking to people and charities that work in the industry that might not want to be named because they have to work so closely with these councils. You know, the counts are done on one night of the year during November. Shelters are opening earlier. There are often not many people on the street, and that's supposed to be a snapshot for the entire year. So there's an idea here that even if the numbers are going down, the problem is, if anything, increasing. And that amount of money that's being pushed now by the Chancellor for funding for that suggests that maybe there's an agreement there.
Yeah, possibly. Mm. I think, you know, politically it was needed, or the Conservatives needed to show that they weren't, kind of uncaring as a party, because they're quite vulnerable to that. And I think, you know, it was an interesting announcement, but, you know, where's the money going to come from?
Then that will be the questions that I imagine the Chancellor's going to be having to answer over the next few days from the media.
Yeah, inevitably,
Who are going to, we'll want to know, don't we? I mean, where is all this money coming from?
Well,
because if this had been pushed forward buy a Labour agenda, we'd be talking about the magic money tree, wouldn't
yes,
we?
That's
because that's
point,
very
yeah.
much the media yeah. line that would have gone with. But having as this is a Conservative budget, you know, we need to know.
Yes, and you know the red, blue, I don't know what colour books they are, but the official books with the kind of the real figures, which often throw up some interesting ways in which the balance sheets are squared off, will be out in the next few days. Just a couple of other takeaways from the budget, which I think are relevant. There's going to be a freeze on fuel duty, which is going to be maintained. A couple of Kent MPs had joined a joint or signed a letter to the Chancellor saying don't lift the freeze on fuel duty because it will hit small businesses who rely on being able to get around and spend a lot of money on petrol. That was Craig McKinley, the South Thanet MP, and Tracy Crouch, the Chatham and Aylesford MP.
Well, they'll both be very pleased, then.
Will undoubtedly be pleased about that side of things. And, you know, no duty rise on alcohol. That's always a bit of a, you know, bit of a vote winner. So there was lots of detail in there today, and we're kind of talking about it straight off the back of the speech.
Off the hoof.
So we'll see what comes out.
Talking Points, Ken's Politics Podcast.
So moving slightly away from the budget, which is the main reason we wanted to jump in the studio today, there's a couple other things we need to talk about.
Yes.
I think one of them is actually coronavirus related as well, unfortunately. So this is the PCC elections.
Oh, yes.
This is something that I've been trying to get into the podcast now for at least 4 weeks, Paul.
Your moment has come.
And it gets vetoed every single time.
Yeah, I'm not going to veto it this time.
No vetoing.
No.
So for the listeners that don't know, PCC, Police and Crime Commissioner elections, every four years.
Yeah.
Matthew Scott is our current Police and Crime Commissioner.
Conservative.
And we've got elections coming up in May.
Or have we?
On to you, Paul.
Yes. Well, you know, there's been lots of things that have had to be cancelled or postponed because of the coronavirus crisis. Football matches, you know, concerts, conferences, and now joining them is the possibility that the government might move to cancel the elections for the Police and Crime Commissioners, which are only a matter of weeks away.
Where there is an element of comedy here, because, you know, a lot of these advisories are about large-scale public gatherings, and the turnout
yes.
for the PCC elections is historically really quite low.
Yes, the joke is that, you know, would anyone notice if the Police and Crime Commission elections were postponed or put off?
I mean, for listeners, was it 21%?
21%, yeah.
Yeah, 21% in 2016.
Yeah, a very indifferent electorate, I'd say, reflected in those figures. So it's a possibility that they may not go ahead. There's a couple of council elections too in Kent in May, where a third of councillors are going to be contesting seat, or a third of all the seats will be up for grabs. That's Tunbridge Wells and Maidstone. But again, you know, the arguments for postponing that seem pretty slim at this stage. But then, you know, you talk to the councils involved and they say, well, you know, suppose we get struck by, you know, or have a lot of people who signed up to be counters or tellers at polling stations. How are they going to be found at the last minute? So there are quite, you know, it looks a bit bizarre to think of cancelling elections, but there are some issues which are actually quite, you know, pertinent.
And just a point on the PCC elections generally, why is the turnout so low?
Because I don't think people understand the concept of crime commissioners. They don't understand that they're not kind of high sheriffs sort of patrolling the streets of Kent and cutting crime and catching criminals and putting them behind bars.
Which would be really cool.
Which would be good, you know, if they had sheriff's badges, you know, and those funny boots and horses. I think the criticism of the model of police commissioners is that they don't have terribly much power, and that is absolutely the case. They don't have terribly much power. They kind of offer strategic oversight to the forces, but they're not involved in day-to-day crime fighting, which is the job of the chief constable. And I just think, you know, police and crime commissioners is a kind of bit of a unsexy kind of title for a political role.
So, the headline is Paul thinks the PCC is unsexy.
I'm not saying they need sexing up like that famous dossier, but I just think people don't really understand the concept of it, basically, even though they've been around since 2012. And I think the reason people don't understand it is because they mistakenly think they're people who do go around catching criminals and putting them behind bars, whereas actually that's the job of the chief constable.
There you go. Well,
you've got your bit in about policing.
Yeah, crisis. And do you know what? It wasn't worth it.
Talking Points, Ken's Politics Podcast.
So one other thing we need to talk about, which was a development from last week, is the potential moving of the Kent County Council offices.
Yes.
So what's going on there?
Well, we broke this story last week about a vague plan, nothing concrete at this stage, but Kent County Council currently occupies Sessions House, which is a Grade 2 listed building, and it costs a fortune to maintain. I didn't realise this, but it apparently costs £2 million a year to maintain.
Wow.
So the council is thinking of perhaps of vacating its headquarters, which it's been based at for over a century, and moving to more modern offices. Now, it's said that it wants to stay in Maidstone, which, you know, would make sense. It's the county town, and that's where the headquarters of the county council ought to be. But people I've spoken to can't actually think of anywhere in Maidstone at this juncture which would suit being the base of the county council. I mean, the one thing that you do need for the council is a council chamber, and there are 81 councillors or 80 plus councillors. And finding some kind of, you know, accommodation which would which could be transferred or transformed into a debating chamber is pretty hard.
Yeah, although £2 million is a lot of money to be spent every year.
So, we had a Conservative county councillor on the TV show last week who said it wasn't going to happen because it was too, you know, it'd be too difficult to find a place to move. But staff have been briefed about the idea. They're looking at plans and options. They might sell it or they might lease it. We'll just have to see what happens.
As we often say, we'll see what happens
in due course.
I'll put you massively on the spot now for the end of this episode, Paul. Do you have any jargon for us this week?
Oh, well, we were looking at a story. We ran a story about the spending watchdog calculating how much money, taxpayers' money, had been spent on preparing for Brexit, and it came in at a rather eye-wateringly high sum of £4 billion. This is based on figures from the various government departments. 18 government departments were asked how much they spent on preparations for Brexit, and the National Audit Office totted it all up, and it came to more than £4 billion.
Wow.
And in the report setting out these figures, there was this curious phrase around... I've forgotten the phrase.
Well, I think I know the one you're talking about. Is it fruitless?
Fruitless costs or fruitless payments.
Oh, I think it was fruitless payments.
Fruitless payments.
Okay, Paul, what's a fruitless payment?
Well, a fruitless payment is the kind of payment that went to these ferry companies who the government contracted to provide additional capacity in the event that there was a no-deal Brexit and they needed to get people and stuff across the channel. And they spent about £80 million on ferry contracts, and they paid that money, and the ferry companies held on to it, even though it was never used for the purpose for which it was intended. So it was on the balance sheet, it's counted as a fruitless payment.
So it'd be like if I bought a car, but then never used it, or it never got delivered.
That's right.
You looked at me then like, I don't know if that's actually a very good example, but...
So there's fruitless payments and constructive losses.
Oh, right.
And I've thrown a swerveball at you there because...
I don't know what a swerveball is.
Curveball, even. A constructive loss is the kind of money which the government pays to an organisation or a company but gets nothing in return for it. So in this particular case, because Eurotunnel had not been consulted about the option of providing additional capacity, it threatened to take the government to court saying, you know, it would have bid for these contracts to provide extra capacity. And the government, in order to head off that legal challenge, reached a settlement with Eurotunnel, and that settlement ended up with, I think it was £30 million going to Eurotunnel.
Not a small amount of money.
And so Eurotunnel got £30 million cash in hand. Well, not cash in hand.
imagine cash in hand, £30 million.
Got a big truck.
Yeah, big ferry.
For actually not doing anything, basically.
That is quite fruitless.
So that's a constructive loss.
Oh, sorry.
You're getting constructive losses mixed up with your fruitless payments.
So stupid. Well, I'm gonna go away and contemplate my stupidity. Thank you everyone for listening. Thank you, Paul, for joining me once again.
Pleasure.
We'll be back next week, maybe in self-isolation. Who knows? We'll find out.
See you then.
Talking Points, Ken's Politics Podcast.